famous Phil Hendry show, El Pacifico in Southern California. And, you know, like that. Hi, it's Phil, and this is a Phil-only. Stand by. For our Phil-only show today, we're giving the panel the day off, and I thought I would jump in here and do a Phil-only with you. Because, you know, what we like to do is kind of alternate. We'll have the panel, then we have Kenny Slagg, and then we've got, Gene Jabel, a bunch of other things. But we haven't done a Phil-only in a long time, and I want to do this one because I thought it would be a good idea. I thought it would be cool to maybe unburden myself about all of the election stuff. And the reason why I'm saying that is I think that what I want to do is something that I did on Periscope about 2 months ago. And that is, I want to just lay out as you know, intelligently as I possibly can, because we just saw Donald Trump sweep all kinds of states here yesterday in Super Tuesday. He got Rhode Island, he got Pennsylvania, he got a lot of them. Maryland, Connecticut, Delaware. And I think the guy is bad for the country, but I here's what I want to say. I'm not here to yell at you, and I'm not here to make you feel, you know, you may think, hey man, I don't want to listen to you, Phil, talking politics. You may want to tune right out now, but I will tell you, I've got reasons, and I can list them right down to, you know, A through Z, why the guy is not going to be a good president, why he is flying by the seat of his pants, why he really doesn't have a plan other than this. This is his plan. His personality, his smile, his, hey, I don't know, his hairstyle, whatever, that's what's going to be the winner. That's Donald Trump's plan. Now, that's it. Now, you can go to his website and you can look up his positions on a lot of different things. His positions on a lot of things are completely unoriginal. They are taken from God knows how many different Republican planks in the Republican platform going back how many, God knows how many elections. For instance, he has cut the corporate tax. Cut the corporate tax. Now, you know, probably this is a generation of Americans that know better than any other generation of Americans or anybody else in the world that there is a more and more a concentration of wealth at the very high end, if you will, of our of the earning power in this country. The profits, the money that's being made is flowing upstairs, and it's not coming back down to the middle class in the form of wages, in the form of more jobs, the creation of more opportunities for jobs. This money is going upstairs and it's staying there. Now, you know, in a healthy economy, the money that is earned by a corporation, by a company, by an individual, is oftentimes reinvested. You know, a capital expense, and you go back into your company or your concern because you want to make the company bigger, you want to expand its abilities, expand its capabilities, you want to hire more people and pay more in wages. Now, this is sort of how the middle class maintains its status, its existence. But it isn't happening anymore. It's not happening anymore. There are, it seems, fewer and fewer individuals that want to risk going into the world and create these opportunities, create these businesses, expand the companies that they already have. Fewer and fewer people want to take that chance. Is it because of taxes? That's what Donald Trump would have you believe. And that's what a lot of you guys I know believe. Now, like I said, I'm not here to insult anybody. I'm really not. And I apologize if I have in the past. And I know that you have your minds made up in a lot of ways, but please consider something, if you wouldn't mind. Just one thing. The highest corporate tax rate that America ever had was in 1969. It was 52.5%. That was the corporate tax in America. That year, we had a unemployment rate of 3.5%. What I'm saying to you is there is no necessary correlation between the two. Because you lower a corporation's tax doesn't mean they're going to turn around and put that money back into the company and back into wages and back into expansion and back into hiring people. It does not necessarily have any linkage. Well, that's ridiculous. Well, there's a lot of reasons. Why are people holding on to their money like it's, well, it is gold, you know, like it's more than gold, and they're not reinvesting in the economy? Why are they doing that? Why is that 1% holding on to so much of the money and not sending the money back into business, back into the middle class? Why? Is it because they're devoid of ideas? Is it because they don't want to risk it in such an unsure world? I believe that that's got a lot to do with it. I also think it's because people are enjoying their money more now than they ever have before, to be honest with you. I think you have a lot of nouveau riche. I think you've got a lot of people that like having money and don't necessarily know the value of reinvesting it to the extent that they need to, the value of reinvesting it into the country, investing it into companies, investing it into startups, investing it into expanding companies, hiring people. This is all of the stuff that many people who are tax cut advocates always tell you is going to happen when taxes are cut. And yet we know for a fact that even with the most conservative of presidents, like a Ronald Reagan, taxes are raised. Why? Because sooner or later, America needs to pay its bills, and we live pretty good here. And by cutting taxes, you're cutting revenue. When you cut revenue, you don't have money. When you don't have money, you can't do stuff like military, infrastructure, Social Security, which every single person in this country receives or will receive and hasn't got a problem with, or Medicare. One of the major complaints that the early Tea Party had, this was the Tea Party now, this was a tax cut faction of our country, a very extreme tax cut. I'm not saying extreme as in bad. I mean, I'm saying real tax cut people, the Tea Party. And yet, one of the biggest complaints they had was that they were afraid their Medicare was going to get fucked with. Their government health care was going to get fucked with because they didn't want Obama's health care. They wanted their health care. This is where the narrative starts to break down a little bit. But let me just get back to Trump. Donald Trump says he's going to cut the corporate rate to, I think, 13, 15%. I don't know where it is right now. I'm sorry, I don't. I think it's up around 30. He wants to cut it in half. The highest corporate rate in the history of the country, 52.5%, was at a time when we had 3.5% unemployment. Because those companies back then, however they did it, for whatever reasons they did it, found a way to keep people work, to employ people. Okay. Now, we were at war. We had a fair number of soldiers going to Vietnam. But hey, the fact of the matter is, it was not a wartime economy, not like World War II. All right. There were no executive orders shutting down strikes and things like that. The Vietnam War, I know because I was alive then. I was a teenager, and I know exactly. That war was, if you want to call it a police action, I think that's a little light, but it was part and parcel of what America did. It was no longer like, let's marshal all the strength of the country and everybody's got to ration. There was no rationing. You know, and everyone's going to have to, nobody's putting stars up in their windows. I mean, it was a very unpopular war. And nobody was going to sacrifice their way of life, their lifestyle. Nobody was going to be rationing anything to fight the Vietnam War. Wasn't going to happen. It was not as expensive a war, I guess, if you could put it that way. But fact remains, the country kind of percolated along, had a lot of money, a lot of jobs, and a very high corporate income tax. Now, a very high corporate tax. Now, you cut the corporate tax in America, nothing guarantees the money is going to return to the economy in the form of higher wages. All right? So here's what you say to me. You say, and again, I'm just giving you a critique of the Donald Trump program. So then you say to me, well, that's okay, Phil, because Mr. Trump is going to bring those companies he's going to bring those companies that have gone overseas back, so there will be more jobs, because those companies are going to come back here. How are they going to come back here? He's going to offer them incentives, or he's going to make it more expensive for them to do business in this country. That's the big threat. And let me underline that word threat, Because when Donald Trump was pressed on this question, you understand what this is going to do to the economy. His response was, and he's never changed it, it's a threat. You understand this is a threat. Because what's going to happen is that, look, guys, like I said, I know you're not stupid. I'm not. Donald Trump isn't stupid. But when a guy doesn't answer a question, when the guy redirects the answer with the phrase, here's what's going to happen, that's, I mean, come on. I mean, look, at we're Americans, aren't we? I mean, we point and laugh at people that get yoked by a dictator or a strong man, or they get yoked by a lot of bullshit propaganda. How could it be that we're falling for someone saying, now, wait a minute, let me tell you what's going to happen. I understand that Donald Trump is a great businessman. I absolutely understand that, man. I know that the guy has built buildings and has operated a company that is, I don't know really how big. I don't think it's unfair, and I don't even think that it's wrong to say, gee, could you show us your income tax return so we can see where your earnings are actually coming from and how much money you actually, you know, how good are you, man? Well, he's got his own airplane. We can't allow ourselves, folks, to be, you know, treat this like the guy's a movie star and we're really impressed by his airplanes and shit, because, man, we got a country here that we stand to lose. I ain't saying that Donald Trump's going to lose the country for us, but if we make a dumb vote here and we begin kind of a very weak response and an acquiescence to these kinds of candidates, talk about a slippery slope, man. We're, you know, there's no stopping us. So he says this. That's a threat. Well, all right, it's a threat. If you say to China, you know, you better stop manipulating the currency, which, by the way, China's doing because it makes it more expensive for them to, you know, it makes it a lot more expensive for any of their companies to do business here. It makes it better for their company just to stay in China and their companies to stay in China and do business there. Understood. That's what they do. And Trump hates it. Because we don't get the same break from our government, obviously, because we don't do that kind of thing. And we, you know, it makes it more expensive for our companies to do business overseas. And it certainly is expensive for our companies already to do business here in the United States. Why is that? Because our workers demand more in wages. Because the prices are higher and they're going to go up even more. If we are basically tariffing certain companies, we're saying it's going to cost you money to come here and sell your products. But I'm kind of going bass-ackwards here. But let's just go back to China here for a second. So Trump is saying that he's going to slap a tariff on goods coming in from China. He is going to make it more expensive for the Chinese and for American companies that expatriated, if you will, make it more expensive for those companies to sell their stuff in the United States. It's going to cost you, man. No more of those riots on Black Friday. You're not going to have people busting down windows to go in and get all that cheap Chinese junk the day after Thanksgiving. It's going to be more expensive. And for you companies that did the same thing, for you company, you American companies that are coming back over here with you know, the goods that you manufactured in China, all that cheap Chinese labor, and you left the American worker out to dry, you guys are also going to be punished with a 35% tariff. Now, what do you think the Chinese response to that is? Well, let me give you an example of something that's happening right now. Boeing, understand something. Boeing, you know, Boeing, they make airplanes. Boeing is so desperate to build airplanes in China. Boeing is so desperate to sell aircraft to China. Boeing is so desperate that they sign away their intellectual property rights. Now, that's a fact. They've signed away their that means basically their patents. Things they've developed, things that they have protected internationally up to that point, they now make absolutely and freely available to the Chinese. That's how desperate these companies are. Why is that? Because American workers cost too goddamn much, and the marketplace in China is huge. It's a huge market. So here's what the Chinese do. when Donald Trump says, we're going to throw a tariff on your ass, and we're going to make it more expensive, the Chinese turn around and they say, well, then I guess we're not going to be able to allow American companies to operate over here, and they will be denied access to a 1 billion person marketplace. How does that make you feel, you know? We're just not going to let any more American companies operate over here. And as a matter of fact, the companies that are operating over here, we may have to make things a lot tougher for them. And Trump will say, well, that's fantastic. They'll come back to America. Sure, go right ahead, man, and pay all those high American wages. What do you think they're over here for? Manufacturing here and selling to the Chinese. Man, it's nothing but money. It's nothing but money. Don't pay the Chinese worker anything. You got a billion person market. But if that's the way you want to play it, Mr. Trump, here's what we're going to do, the Chinese. Because what you guys are hearing is you're hearing the Donald Trump sales pitch, which, and he's a damn good salesman. He's saying, leave it to me. Now, I mean, forgive me, because I think more highly of Americans than that. I mean, I don't know, but I've always thought of us as being the world's greatest people when it came to seeing through a bullshit artist. I really have. I've always considered the American people to be the very best when it came to just seeing right through all the horse shit. I don't understand why we can't see it now. I know there's frustration. And I know there's a cultural and demographic shift happening in the country. And it's scaring a few people. And we can get into that in a minute. But I get all that. But that's no reason at all for us to lose our minds and just throw our trust at the feet of, and I'm not saying Trump's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's an evil guy. I mean, he's a man, he's the product of his environment, he's the product of a certain upbringing and a certain attitude, but he's not a horrible man. He's, you know, if you want to say the cat's bigoted or even racist, hey, you know what? There's a big, big clubhouse there that's got a lot of people in it. But I am telling you this, he's given you the side of the story that says, I'm Donald Trump, you watch me as I work these Chinese, because I'm a master negotiator. Well, I went to China, and I was not a part of any big deals. I wasn't a part of any huge, you know, operations over there. I went to China simply as a tourist in 1982. I saw, though, when I was in China, all of the business people that had flooded into the country that year, because that was the first year that the Chinese were giving tourist visas. And I went over with a group of Americans and Canadians with our 10-speed bikes. I was 29 years old. And it looked like an adventure, you know, and I wanted to see China and, you know, what's not to dig, especially if you're a history freak like me. And I mean, it's an immense and fascinating country. So over we went, and there wasn't a night that went by that I wasn't meeting an Italian businessman, some guy from Spain, a couple of Americans. Everybody jumping into the Chinese market, man. Wow. And they all had the same thing to say. These Chinese are ball breakers. Well, how's it going? Are you kidding? Was not good. Well, no, I mean, they're breaking our balls over here. Well, how good could they be? Because Donald Trump's on the way. Man, let me say this. The Chinese folks, you know, as a country, have dealt with the Western powers, whether they be democratic, whether they be the militaristic powers. The Chinese have dealt with the West in very negative circumstances for well over 100 years, as you know. And they got real sick of it real fast. They got taken every way you can get taken. They had opium wars that, frankly, were, you know, incited by the British. They had every kind of manipulation and theft of their national treasure going on. They did not have a good experience with us. And when I say us, yeah, that includes the Americans, because we were right there. Our Marines were there in Beijing and in Nanking, not during World War II, but I'm talking about the Boxer uprisings and these anti-foreigner uprisings. It was really funny because the West said, we have a right to be in China. We want to be there and we want to, like, make money. And how dare you tell us we can't be? When have you ever heard of a people so arrogant as to say, we have a right to be in your country and, like, you got to sell to us and you just got to do business with us? And that was there was a very strong, reaction to that. The Chinese have seen us coming for a long time. And with all great respect to Mr. Trump, they'll see him coming too. They're not impressed. Because they know how desperately American companies want to get into that market. Now, I want you to consider something. All I'm asking you to do is consider this. What does Donald Trump say to a company that says, what the hell are you doing? What? I had a contract to go and build my XYZ over in China with all the cheap workers and all that stuff. And what are you doing, man? They won't let me in there now. What are you blaming me for? What am I blaming you for? You're slapping a tariff on all these other companies. I haven't even had a chance to go to work over there. And you're slapping a tariff on basically on the Chinese and on every American company that is trying to export over here. It's killing me, man. You're killing my business. You keep your business here and sell to Americans, and don't tell me how to do my business. Don't tell me how to make a living. I can't make a living over here. I can't pay my workers the money that is demanded by Americans. Well, then maybe you ought to be, you know, I mean, this will be an argument that's going to take place. Maybe you ought to do what? Maybe you ought to pay your workers more. Oh, okay, Mr. Trump, that's great. How about you, man? What are you going to do? Now, I don't doubt, and Donald Trump is not dumb. He's going to get himself ready. He's going to gird himself for what it is that they're going to throw at him in the campaign. And one of the things they're going to throw at him is, hey, Trump, you're manufacturing your sportswear over in China. What's that about? Now, I know what he said during the campaign and the debates. He said, hey, they're letting me do it. Why wouldn't I take advantage of that as a businessman if they allow me to do that? And his thinking is that when I become president, then I become altruistic. I become a man for all the people. I become the president. And then I become, I guess what, more mindful of other people, American workers. But right now I'm just a business owner, so I don't really give a shit. I'm doing my stuff over there, and they're letting me do it. It's kind of an argument that says it's not my fault, which is, come on. But he doesn't have to stop doing business in China. His supporters are not demanding it of him. The voters are not demanding it of him. And it's worrying for a guy like me, because I think if a man takes a stand, he ought to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And Trump is still manufacturing his sportswear, whatever it is, golf shirts in China. And this cat is saying, well, I mean, do you blame me? You know, my hands are tied, man. You know, I've got to do it because the deal is so good. What? The Chinese will shut off their market to American business. Sure as God made green apples, as my dear father used to say. Now, here's the question of Mexico and this flood of immigrants. This is very, very scary. I know that there's lots of immigrants. I understand that. I also know that the flow of illegal immigrants to this country has slowed dramatically. I don't think it's out of the question to predict that by the time a Donald Trump were to take office as president, it will slow even more. There may be no need to build the wall. And I personally wouldn't blame him if he said, hey, you know, we needed the wall. We don't need the wall anymore. $10 billion, $12 billion, that's money we can save. We don't need the wall. We have a border patrol now that's effective. We've got a lot of other things. I don't know, you know. And he may not have to build the wall. He may not have to do anything with Mexico with regards to, other than the fact there's free trade, and he wants to make sure that $55 billion trade imbalance, and with China it's a $500 billion trade imbalance, he wants to make sure, he wants to get his money back on that somehow. He wants to somehow even things out. Every move he makes with Mexico or with China when it comes to stopping the flow of product from those countries where it is inexpensively made and having it instead manufactured here, every move he has to make is going to have to be accompanied by higher prices, because it's going to have to be accompanied by higher wages. Now, I am the first guy in line when it comes time to vote. Who's your favorite worker in the world? American worker is the greatest. I got my hand raised high. But you understand, guys, that your skill comes at a cost. It comes at a premium. And nobody wants to pay you anymore. The 1%, they're holding onto that goddamn money like it's the last dollar that's ever going to be printed. And nobody wants to touch that. No one wants to go near that. Nobody wants to even consider a higher tax on all of that money that's being hogged up there with the 1%. No, no, we won't go near that. In fact, we're going to cut taxes for those guys. What we need to do instead is to manipulate somehow trade and tariff and international relations, even at the risk of wrecking some of those relationships, so that we can stop the foreign labor from producing and American labor begins to produce and the companies make more money in order to give the American labor more money and also, you know, obviously to expand the companies and also justify their higher prices. And all of that involves this large and labored, and I have to believe, because I'm just looking at it, you know, clear-eyed, really highly hypothetical and risky challenges to our trading partners and to other nations that we do business with. Because why? Because we don't want to go near the 1% and their money. We don't want to tax it. We don't want to shake any of that bread down from the money tree at all. We want to let them be. Let them have their whatever it is they got. They got most of the wealth in this country, 1%, and we don't want to go near that. Instead, we want to cut taxes for those cats. Cut taxes all the way around for corporations. None of that guarantees anything. It doesn't guarantee jack shit. And threaten the Chinese with denial in the American marketplace. The Chinese turn around and do the same thing with us. And by the way, goodbye China as leverage against North Korea when all that shit comes down. I don't know what Donald Trump is thinking when it comes to the Chinese. I know he knows them. I know that he understands them. He knows they don't respond to threats. If he knows them, the American company, the corporations, the employers, the businesses that would ordinarily access your skill, they're moving to other countries. They don't want to pay your ass. They'd rather see you just die. I'm telling you, you know it. That's wrong. And I absolutely, you know, support anybody that wants to breathe life into our middle class and begin to extend to them fair wages and health care and all of the good things that come with middle class American life. But right now, the problem isn't with too much goddamn government spending. Got nothing to do with that, because again, cut that corporate tax and I'm telling you, you're still faced with a bunch of people that either don't know what they're doing, don't want to pay you, don't care whether whether there's a fair wage being paid to an American worker, because they know they can pay it to somebody else. Or let's just think of it this way. I don't even have to be in business anymore, man. I made all my money. I got it right up here with a 1%. I'm going to build swimming pools and mansions, all kinds of bullshit, and not go back into business. These dudes are building mansions, you know, to the tune of $20, $30 million mansions. I think it's pretty fair to say they have very little interest in reinvesting capital investment in their companies, in their workers, in the American economy, in the middle class. So, you know, the Mexican worker and the Chinese worker is your, frankly, your enemy. But it ain't Obama, and it's not the goddamn government spending. It's not, even if it's government spending on the military or governments. And here we come to a third facet that is an utter and complete fallacy. And it's really scary, man, that more of us don't understand. I do not have a big grasp of economics, believe me when I tell you, but I know how to put two and two together. And when Mr. Trump says that he is going to attack waste and he's going to attack corruption. He's got, you know, waste and fraud. That's it. Fraud and waste. He's not the first guy to say it. He's not the first guy to say that that's what I'm going to do. We've had the Golden Fleece Award going on there in Congress. It was started by one of those senators, you know, of companies, of government contracts, of private concerns ripping the American people off, or intergovernmental ripoffs. But that doesn't amount to jack shit. It doesn't amount to the kind of money that, for instance, is going to cover an annual deficit. It doesn't even come close. And to be perfectly honest with you, the name of the game here is to get spending going in the private sector in this country so that we've got more jobs, more employment, and a better life for our people. You ain't going to get that done by making sure that Boeing isn't charging us too much money for a freaking airline seat or some bolt that goes into a toilet or something. It's just not going to happen. Biggest amount of money that is wasted. Everybody, we're still, you know, you realize the American people, we're still in this foreign aid kick. Forget it, man. We don't spend anything on foreign aid compared to the bread that we spend on, for instance, the entitlements, for instance, the Social Securities. Now, let's talk about health care. I'm sorry. It's a very tough topic. And it's really unfair for politicians. And I got to tell you, Mr. Trump is a politician. I know he says he isn't, and he hasn't been a career politician, but he has to approach this as a politician. He's also approaching things that's very troubling. He approaches things by simply dismissing with an explosive word or phrase. He does not explain to you. This country has been paying trillions a year in health care. When people say, I don't want Obamacare, I have to pay for that. When they say that, apparently they're not aware of the fact they've been paying for it anyway. You and I have been paying for it anyway. We've been paying the emergency room health care of America. That's where you go to the emergency room and law dictates you have to be treated, or anybody has to be treated. You and I pay for that in higher insurance premiums, or who God knows what, taxes, municipal taxes, bonds, something. The hospitals start charging more. We're paying for it anyway. It's mind-boggling that people will begin to complain about the fact that they have to pay. Here's what you're paying for with Obamacare. First of all, you're paying into something where the costs are controlled. You're also ensuring that people have the proper kind of insurance so that when someone says to you, I had my insurance taken away from me under Obamacare, that's the kind of bullshit thing that is. What they're basically saying is this: I had a bullshit policy that wasn't covering me for shit. I was probably going to die the minute I got into a hospital. Obamacare, or the law, the Affordable Care Act, says you have to be covered thus and so to make damn sure you got proper coverage. Most these insurance plans that people are, they don't want to give up on because it's so affordable, it isn't covering your ass for ass rash, man. You aren't getting your ass covered for most probably prescriptions, certain hospitalization. And they say, well, there's a $5,000 deductible. Yes, there is. Yes, there is a $5,000 deductible. It's brutal, but it beats the hell out of $100,000, $200,000, $250,000 that you're not going to pay, with all due respect. It winds up being paid by, the rest of us. And let's say you're not the guy, but it becomes a $200,000, $250,000 tab that the rest of us pay for whoever this guy is that's going to stiff the hospital because he can't afford it. But instead, he bitches about the fact that he's got a $5,000 deductible on a plan that's got his ass covered up one side and down the next. He thinks that's shitty. He wants to go back to his shit plan that doesn't cover anything. Now he gets sick. Well, what about my prescriptions? That's not covered. Well, what about hospitalization? Only half. Well, how about, different procedures like, CAT scans? Or what about, that doesn't cover that. See, here's what it said. You didn't read the fine print. It says this. The Affordable Care Act said, though, it is illegal to sell policies like that now. Illegal. That's why you hear people say, I lost my coverage, but they don't continue the sentence. I lost my coverage because it wasn't worth a shit. Well, how did they know? They didn't know because they never needed it before. If they'd actually had to use that coverage, they would have found themselves laying out in the street. It's one of Mr. Trump's favorite phrases, right? People dying in the street. Well, they'd be dying in the street. Or, more to the point, the reality of the situation, they'd be in the hospital, at the charity of the hospital, at the mercy of the hospital, and eventually that bill being paid by the hospital passed on to you and I. That's how that gets paid. We are paying for it now. We're paying for it now. I'm only saying this because I don't want to get angry. I think we're Americans, you know, and man, we're in this thing together. And I'm just trying to, I'm not saying that you're, if you vote for Trump, I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm not saying that at all. I just want you to consider a couple of things. That's all. You know, consider some of these things that we're talking about. They're, if you are open-minded, and I believe that most of us are, you'll say, okay, let me look through this now with a bit of a, you know, tighter focus. Let me take a look at what we're talking about. Mr. Trump, he's an exciting speaker. I think he's a good man. I think he's a patriot. I do too. I think he's a patriot. I think he loves America. But I think he is the, I think he has the failings of his personality like we all do. Like we all do. And this is not the time, I don't think, to say, trust me. That, no, that's not what we do in this country. Other countries have done that, and you know what happened to them. We don't do that here. We tell a guy, all right, let me see it, man. How many of you were raised by, I think, you know, it's funny. America, if it's nothing, it's a country of salesmen. Yeah, we have farmers. We got a lot of salesmen. I was raised by a salesman. My father was a guy who would say, like so many, like Ronald Reagan, okay? Trust but verify. I mean, if you are a Reagan fan, you remember that quote, trust but verify. You can trust what Donald Trump's talking about. You have to verify this stuff. You can't say that Obamacare is a disaster because people are losing their coverage. A lot of people are losing their coverage because it's illegal to offer a plan that does not adequately cover an individual in the United States of America. Otherwise, they're going to go to a hospital and the cost of that is going to be passed on to us unfairly. It always is, and it has been. Do you want that? Of course you don't. If your coverage is legal, if it covers what it's supposed to cover, for instance, I went in a hospital 5 years ago, whatever it was, for pneumonia. I had my hospitalization covered. I had my x-rays. I had my prescriptions. Everything. I have great insurance through my union. But it was still a $5,000 deductible. Now, it was either that or for the week I spent in the hospital. What do you think a week in a hospital costs? I don't know. I'm asking... I've never had to pay it. 50 G's, 75, with all the other, with the x-rays that they took and all the other stuff that was happening for me. About $100,000 stay. $100,000. Think of that, man. I mean, I can't pay that in a week. Well, maybe I could, but I'm rich. No, what I'm saying is it's 100 G's. No one can pay that. So what happens? The hospital sucks it up and they pass it on to some other schmuck. The insurance company, their insurer, and their insurer passes it on to you and me. And this is what's been happening to us since time began. Healthcare is 100 and, God almighty, it's 130 years old. 130 years, national healthcare is 130 years old. It was Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany in the 1880s, who began a program of national healthcare. And it has been adopted by every developed country in the world, with the exception of America. Because, and I understand, Americans don't trust European bullshit. And we have good reason. We don't trust it. If from the very beginning of this country, if it smelled of Europe, we don't want anything to do with it. And why? Because we were a colony of a European power. And you remember that John Adams series? I love that. When they're debating in Congress, and they called it British contagion. Like it was a disease. So we consider anything from Europe to be almost like a disease. It's socialistic, it's communistic, it's bullshit. Only in this case, it's not. See? Now, Mr. Trump wants to do what a lot of conservatives want to do. And what is that? They say, if you make it easier for an insurance company to do business, they will lower their premiums and more people will be able to access the this and the that. And there's something else. That sounds great, but it's still a voluntary program. And we hate the idea of being compelled to do something. Yes, we do, and with good reason. But we also agree, I think all of us, no matter who we are, that taxes are a part of the game plan here, man. It's part of the program. And as our Supreme Court ruled, and maybe you call it judicial activism, but they said it's like a tax. We are taxed for all kinds of things in this country. This is a tax to ensure that the needs of Americans when it comes to health care, those needs are met equitably. Notice I didn't say fairly because it's a bullshit word. People don't like it. Equitably. Those needs are met equitably. And the cost of the health care of Americans, as it has been up to this point, is not dumped on the backs of the middle class because a guy can't pay. And so we're paying more in our own insurance premiums. We're paying more when we go to the hospital. We're paying more everywhere, man, so that everybody else gets paid for. We've been getting our asses kicked. I mean, we have been getting screwed. And when do we start screaming about it? When we get an Affordable Care Act that seeks to remedy the situation. And it's very easy, man, to come in and say, well, this is a bunch of bullshit. It's a disaster. I got to be honest with you, I'm speaking as respectfully as I can. I haven't seen the Republicans coming up with an idea for any kind of real national, I'm just saying, real national health care ever. The idea of tort, well, let's talk about tort reform. Remember when they were talking about tort reform? What is that? That means that you can't sue a doctor and reform the amount of malpractice suits that are being brought and are being awarded, okay? It was $150 billion a year. That's what it would come to, $150 billion. Do you know that that doesn't even dent the $2 or $3 trillion a year that it's costing this country when it comes to health care? That $150 billion, that's a joke. And I mean, for the longest time, that's all those cats ever talked about. Now they say, let them have their insurance across state lines. If it works, it works. The problem is nobody's ever, you know, brought it to the table. Nobody's ever, you know, brought this thing up in the halls of Congress. No other administration has ever had a serious conversation about this until this one. And I'm not saying that Obama's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm just telling you. Tell me if I'm wrong. No other administration had a serious conversation about it. How do I know it's serious? Because everybody's flipping their lid over it. Because I've heard very little of anything else, you know, while it was being debated and while it was being, kicked around and while they were formulating this. It was a big, big topic of conversation. And you know, had it been seriously considered in any other administration, it would have been the same thing. I've been around, I've been conscious and aware of politics and even talking politics since, let's say, when I was 12 or 13, the Johnson years. All the way through Nixon, all the way on through Ford and Carter and Reagan and the other four, the first Bush and then Clinton and then comes the other Bush and now comes Obama. Never has any of those cats, has there ever been a serious discussion about health care in this country? Not like this. Now all of a sudden, the guy talks about it and everybody has got a better idea. I understand. I understand, man. But you know something, guys, when a guy's whole career is invested in propping up or just, let's say, defending an ideology, that's not what you and I do. What we do is we try to make it through life the best way possible. We try to find the best plan. We try to get the best doctor. We try to get... propping up an ideology is different. Propping up an ideology is not going for the best. It's just making sure that that side wins. That's pretty dishonest. It doesn't help anybody. Like when I hear Mr. Cruz say, or Senator Cruz, I'm a conservative. You know, that's like saying, I always drive 60 miles an hour. Why? I'll tell you why, because you get there faster. And what about all the people that you're going to run over? The people that I run over, let's talk about the irresponsibility of people stepping in front of my car. You may think I'm talking garbage, but think about it, folks. If you say, this is always my philosophy in life when it comes to politics. I mean, religion I can understand. I mean, we're talking about something immutable like God. We're not talking about a political philosophy on how to run a country. I mean, that's going to flip around and change as the conditions warrant. I've always felt that the better times are, the less we need government. And the conservative point of view should reign. I mean, if we're doing really well in this country, the conservative point of view, in my opinion, should always be the sort of the preeminent point of view, because what do we need government for? Things are good. There's jobs. There's this, there's that. When things are bad, that, man, you need government to come in there, because business is the last thing that's going to bail your ass out. You know, that's when everybody starts running for cover. They ain't going to sit there and say, how can we help our country? I understand that there are those benefactors, such as what happened after the crash of the stock market in 1929, when America's rich and powerful got together and said, we got to do something. We got to stabilize this. We got to start buying some stock. That lasted for like 5 seconds. And then everybody grabbed their money and ran. You know. I think President Trump will rely on what he feels is his strength, his negotiating strength. And he has people believing that he is a master negotiator, and he might be. I don't necessarily want to take his word at that, if you don't mind. I don't really see the massive deals that he's made that are similar to what he would have to cobble together or put together as president. I don't, you know, the great success that Donald Trump has had is as a builder. He's built some magnificent buildings, absolutely. He's a real estate guy, you know. He has to go before the zoning commission. Okay, that's a negotiation of sorts. That's not the Chinese. The Chinese, you'll break down and cry dealing with those guys. And I'm not saying he can't do it. I don't know. Nobody's asked him, and he doesn't allow anybody to ask him questions that are tough enough so that we can really get the A through Z on this thing. Mr. President, Mr. Trump, what happens when the tariff so affects the Chinese that they retaliate by closing their market to American businesses and they kick the American businesses out of there? Well, they're going to be sorry. Oh, are you serious? Look, those are a lot of jobs that are lost in China. That's a totalitarian state. They can put those people to work wherever they want to put them to work. They don't have to deal with they don't have to deal with a democratic atmosphere where there's conversation and dialogue and a lot of dissatisfaction and a lot of answers need to be, you know, a lot of questions have to be answered. That's a totalitarian state. And they shift and move their workforce around as they see fit. Well, we have a lot of power, the Chinese, you know, and they'll see our way when we tell them the American market is closed to you. And the Chinese will say the Chinese market, 1 billion strong, is closed to you. 1 billion. Yeah, but our economy, you don't understand, Phil. Our economy, the money that we have to spend, we are an economy that has far more buying power than the Chinese. Right, and that's why American companies are doing twists and flips, all kinds of gymnastics to get in there and start manufacturing as well as selling their goods, because there ain't a whole lot of cash over there and no one gives a shit. Come on. No, you don't understand, Phil. You don't understand. The Chinese are manipulating the currency. And that's when the conversation and the topic gets changed. And, you know, Donald Trump he's good at making you feel like an idiot because he's a businessman. He wears a suit well. And seriously, I've seen it happen. You have too. He'll change, just kind of laugh at you. And all of the, you know, sort of less sophisticated people will laugh along with him, saying, Mr. Trump wears those really cool suits and he's got his own airplane. This guy must be an idiot that he's talking to. Now, one more thing. Isn't it interesting that he doesn't want his... I know he's being audited. Don't you think, ladies and gentlemen, don't you think that the United States government, the Internal Revenue Service, might be able to complete an audit of Donald Trump in time for some portion of the campaign so the American people could see how his money is made? How much money he's making, and we can verify, that's all, just verify that he is who he says he is in terms of business. Or is it just a matter of seeing that he has an airplane and that he builds golf courses? He's got a golf course over there in Scotland. They're kicking his ass out of there. They don't like what it's done to the environment. They don't like him. I'm not saying anything about Mr. Trump, the Scottish, you know, I'm of Scottish descent, and we're a bunch of assholes, as you probably have surmised just listening to me, but it is interesting that this was a huge, huge undertaking that is going to probably wind up costing him a lot of money because he did not plan very well for where it was going to be located, the environmental impact, and also the effect it was having on the people there. Rather than, now understand, this is a guy that's a master negotiator. Rather than go in and try to, you know, soften the feelings of the people in that part of Scotland for this golf course and golf club, he began insulting them. He said the guy looks like he lives in a ghetto. He lives in a pigsty. Is that what he means by negotiation? You can see what the dude's doing now. I don't see him talking nice. I see him insulting people. And I have a feeling that's what he does. And if it doesn't work, then he just picks up his shit and he leaves. And the other attitude people say, the rest of it's bullshit. What Mr. Trump is going to do is this, 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 and that. All that other stuff, all that abortion stuff, it's all bullshit. Well, hey, there's a lot of us that think that social issues like that belong, you know, with a woman. So I guess I can sort of, you know, Trump is pro-life, I think, but he's walking that line there. I understand that. And I understand that, he talks to people in an insulting way. I'm not going to keep a guy from being president if he's a slob and doesn't have really good social manners. If he's got a good plan for revitalizing, resuscitating, or otherwise continuing the success that his predecessor has had. Barack Obama's got the unemployment rate down below 5%, folks. Mitt Romney said that he'd have it at 6. Newt Gingrich said he'd have the gasoline at $3 a gallon. Barack Obama's got it half of that. Barack Obama's favorability is 52%. There's just nothing the Republicans can really say that's going to stick when it comes to the legacy of Barack Obama or any Democrat who is not a supporter of his. But what's happening right now, party politics is running amok. And you got all of these Bernie Sanders fans who are shitting all over Hillary Clinton with no real reason. They just don't happen to like her. And they're going to wind up fucking themselves. And you have a lot of people that are kissing ass on Donald Trump without asking any real questions as to how this program is going to be implemented. And they're not looking at candidates, for instance, like John Kasich. Yeah. I think that guy would be a great president, personally. But, you know, what do I know? But the fact is, no one's even given that guy a half of a look because they're all impressed with Donald Trump's golf course, his beautiful wife, his whatever the hell else he's got, you know. And I'm not saying that that's all. There's a lot of people that like the guy's style, and they believe that style goes a long way. They believe that because every single thing I brought up to you guys in this hour, every single thing, none of those things have been adequately addressed by Mr. Trump. He has not addressed those contingencies, those eventualities, those possibilities, the reaction of the Chinese, the reaction of the Mexicans, and I've only covered the whole trade thing, you know, and also his objection to national health care. You go to his website, and all you're going to see are solutions that are straight out of the Republican Party playbook. Nothing unique. It's a moderate view, so I suppose it's a return to what, Mitt Romney? Donald Trump has style, and that's what's getting him the popularity and the support. Nothing more. I've seen it. I've debated people that support him on Twitter, and of course that's not a debate at all. But I've seen how people are reacting to him, and every time a hard question is asked, there is no answer given. There's no real answer given. There's a fantasy land that some people are living in. They can't get past, you got A, B, C, they can't seem to get past the D, which is, for instance, what happens when the Chinese retaliate by shutting their markets down? And just exactly how are you going to force the Chinese into doing what? Donald Trump proposes this will all be economic. I will put such pressure on them economically. By what? By tariffing their goods, tariffing the goods of American companies, shutting the American market off to them. The Chinese will retaliate by shutting their market down. These countries, especially these old-style Marxist-Leninist countries, are always tit-for-tat. They always are quid pro quo. And the Chinese especially do not like being made to look bad. And we haven't even gotten into the fact that China now believes the Pacific Ocean belongs to them. And how is President Trump going to deal with that? How is he going to deal with a Chinese Navy, for instance, blockading Taiwan? or muscling Japan? What is the mindset? Tonight, I heard him say the biggest threat to this country are nuclear weapons. And it wasn't more than 3 weeks ago that he said he wanted everybody who wanted nuclear weapons to have them. Japan, South Korea, whoever wants to make it happen. Take care of your own defense. All right, guys, that's it. And I know that maybe I've lost a few of you. I hope, but it was something that I wanted to do. It was something that I felt was necessary to do and just, you know, lay it on you. And like I said, I respect you and I love you. And, man, even if you're voting for Trump, I still, you know, USA forever, man. You know, we're cool. And I'm sorry if I've insulted a lot of you guys in the past, but, you know, I'm Scottish. We're throwing Donald Trump out of Scotland, you know. All right. See you later. World famous Phil Hendry Show is executive produced by me, Phil Hendry, for Siempre Incorporated. All rights reserved on podcast 1.